And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everybody. Today's Wednesday, August 2nd. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us some questions. We want to talk to you. Give us a listen as we're going through the world of sports. Tonight is all about baseball. It's baseball. It's the dog days of summer. They're here. The stretch runs are starting. The trade deadline is coming on. Guys, how are we tonight?
Doing good.
Wonderful.
All right. We're going to get it going with the Mets. They seem to have made the most noise at this deadline. They deal two starters, two relievers. They deal two hitters. They took apart the team. We didn't know this was coming. We knew something was coming. We talked about it a little bit last week. I think we're all surprised that both big starters went, but we can get into it a little bit in a couple of minutes. Yankees did nothing. A lot of other teams kind of tried to add pieces here and there. We saw some teams do some destruction. The White Sox tore themselves apart. The Cardinals took themselves apart. The Mets definitely took themselves apart. Kev, I will go to you to start this with the New York Mets. I'm going to tell you right now. So Scherzer, Verlander, Robertson, Leon, Canha, and Pham. That's the six. Kev, start it off.
There's two ways of looking at this to me. The first one was, and I think if you've heard me over the last couple of weeks on the podcast, I've punted on the Mets season. You know, I've been fed up with them. I'm one of these disgruntled. They just have not played well this year. There's something that's just not right with the team this year. To me, you know, when you trade Canha, Robertson, Pham, thank God we got rid of Leone. even go back early in the year, Escobar, if you want to throw him in as part of it too. These are all guys on expiring contracts. You're not going anywhere this year. They're old players. You want to get rid of them and bring in some prospects, that's fine. Verlander, Scherzer were the two that really surprised me. Now, to me, if you're looking at this year's team and looking ahead to next year, and if you really believe that Scherzer is on the downhill, and if you're a Mets fan, you're going to remember last year in September, him not pitching well against Atlanta. You're going to remember him not pitching well against San Diego in the wild card. So to me, you know, Scherzer's a guy that, you know, you could get something from. Maybe, you know, okay. Verlander to me was the bigger shock that just made it seem like you're punting on trying to win a championship next year. Because now you don't have a number one starter. That being said, if you're starting to look ahead, and the Mets, you know, from what Scherzer was saying in the press conference afterwards, which again, some of these conversations should have been kept quiet. You know, to me, Scherzer, whatever he discussed with the Mets should have stayed internal. Scherzer Mets, I think he was wrong to talk about what the Mets told him looking ahead to 24 and 25. That's up to the Mets to do. That being said, if you start looking at next year, you're looking at needing at least an outfielder. You're looking at rebuilding the bullpen. Now you need to add a bunch of starters. This is a team that's not going to be a championship team next year. With Cohen's money, you feel like he's going to spend enough to put a representative team out there. A team that can probably still compete for the wild card if things fall right. And I think Cohen's trying to balance at this point. I've got the money. I can try to put together a wild card contending team next year. I cannot compete with the Braves yet. But we've got a barren farm system. And this is a chance to replenish some of that. And before I go into too many other details, let me just ask you what you guys think. Darren, Gino?
Well, I'll start. I mean, so here's the thing. I mean, I think Met fans get awfully excited about a lot of it. Listen, the four guys, I actually love the Hall for Leone because kid actually is like the number nine prospect in the Angel organization for Leone. Yep. I was like, that's a haul.
Oh, yeah.
The thing for Pham, the kid's 17, so we won't know for 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah,
no big deal. But you're getting something. He's young. You give him a shot.
But for Pham, that's fine. For Pham, I mean, we signed Pham for $6 million.
Even for Kanha, you know, you got the 30th prospect in the bro. It's fine. You know, all these moves were great, right?
Yep.
I think the Met fans are hanging their hat on something that was really interesting that the Yankees did in 2016, right? The Yankees did the little sellout at the deadline. But the funny part about it is most of the prospects, no matter how good they looked coming in, like Clint Frazier and Justin Sheffield, didn't really pan out. They just didn't. Now, don't get me wrong. The Mets have the same advantage the Yankees did that year, and the fact that they can go out and outspend and re-sign people that they want to bring back. That's the advantage. That's the difference. They can't go out and re-sign Chapman like the Yankees did because the two guys that they gave away, Verlander and Scherzer, will most undoubtedly be kept for one more season, and they will not be given a release in any way, shape, or form. So what it does, it gives – Listen, I made fun of it in the beginning of the year, but DeGrom bit me in the ass when I said it because he got hurt. But they just went older, and now they have an opportunity to go younger. So will there be a lot of great pitchers on the market next year? It's really hard to say. But if there is anybody, they're in line. And it also puts them in place for Ohtani because now you've gotten rid of all that money, and if you have to go $10 million more than everybody else on Ohtani, you can do it. Now, he may choose to $10 million less a year and play in for the Dodgers. He could easily say, I just like the West Coast, more of a Japanese fan base out here. If I was Korean, maybe I'd go to the East, whatever it may be. But the fact of the matter is that you know, Cohen can go $10 million higher and not even think about it. I was stunned by Verlander. I was stunned.
That's the one that got me. Yep. I agree with you. Verlander's the one that got me.
They got the 1-4 prospect from Houston. All right, and for Scherzer, they got Acuna's little brother, so we have no idea if he's any good, but the fact that he's Acuna's little brother, everybody gets all excited. I know I did. G, what are your thoughts?
So the one thing with the prospect, before I get to my point, with the Verlander trade is, both of those guys are the 1-4 prospect in the Houston organization, but neither one is in the top 30 of baseball overall at this point.
Just the kid 67, I think the top one is 67, something like that.
MLB was 68, yep.
Just a point of reference.
But, depends on which service you're looking at, yep.
I heard a lot of talk, and Darren and I did not discuss this beforehand, just as a point of reference.
We hate each other. We don't speak outside.
I heard a lot of talk about how this takes them out of contention next year. And I'm going to tell you right now, maybe, maybe not. Okay. Because yes, you just took away two big starters from your rotation. You're going to need to replace those guys. Cohen is going to be one of those five teams that is going to take a shot on Ohtani. He's got a 1-5 chance, basically. If you come up with the fact that it's probably the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres, if you're going that those are the top five, he's got a 1-5 chance to land them. He's going to offer him as much as anybody else, and then you're going to take a shot. If you land him, you already have one of the two replacements for the rotation that you just got rid of two starters. You only then need to go get somebody else. Could be Snell, could be Nola. There's five or six guys that are going to be out there next year.
Giolito, Montgomery.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of guys to go after.
If you do not land Ohtani, and honestly, I don't think he's coming to the East Coast, but again, they still have 1-5 chance because the other 25 teams are not in this.
I think Boston could join it. I'm just saying, Boston. G.
Okay. No, listen, there's probably a couple of teams, Darren, but three quarters of the teams in baseball are out.
Like you said, Jay, yep. Cohen will not be outbid for Ohtani.
Exactly. He
will outbid. He will have the most money coming out of the Mets.
No doubt. Yep. That's a given. Yep.
So if Ohtani does not choose this team, so now you got to go get a couple of starters. And again, exactly what you said, Kev, which is, maybe they won't be battling for a championship, but they're going to be in contention. Honestly, if half the guys in this lineup come back and produce a little bit towards the back of their baseball card, they're going to be in this if they have a couple of other starters. And they'll get a couple other starters. We just named five starters. One of them is going to come here, maybe two, and you don't know about Quintana, right? So at that point, you got a rotation. Senga's in there. You got a couple other guys, and all of a sudden, you could do it. So I don't see it. I will tell you the same as you guys. I was surprised at the Verlander trade. Basically, Cohen bought prospects with this. That's basically what he did. He found his way around all of the places, all of the pieces that baseball put into place, and bought prospects basically. Because if you take away the money from this conversation, what difference does it make then? But I will tell you, the amount of money that he's going to pay Verlander to pitch for Houston, and it's around $52 million between this year and next year. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the need for him to go get two outfielders that are prospects at this point. Neither one is major league ready today. So chances are neither one is going to start in the majors next season in spring training. So for me, I didn't like it from that point. I understand it. And if money is no object, what the hell is the difference? But honestly, I didn't like the Verlander trade. Kev?
Yeah, I think we're all three of us are in agreement. The Verlander trade is the one that really just sticks out. Like, why? Darren?
Yeah, the Scherzer made the comment after they sold Robertson. At that moment, we said, I got to speak to the front office. I knew he was. I thought he was gone, right? Yep. And then it comes out and that happens. I felt the same way about the amount of money that he kept on. He did George-type stuff back in the day. I don't care. I want the prospect. I'll pay for the prospect.
That's
you
it.
Know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. The one thing I'll say, though, even with the Mets, even if they end up, let's say they miss out on Ohtani, okay? And let's say they come back out there and they get Montgomery and they get Giolito, okay? And which makes nobody ecstatic.
Nobody's
but there's guys you can count on every fifth day to give you professional effort at the very least.
Do you feel like the Mets, with the young players they have in position to play, are in worse shape than the Marlins, are in worse shape than the Nationals, are in worse shape than the Reds, talking about pitching, are in worse shape than the Brewers even? Because one of those two kids is going to be gone too, Woodruff or Burness most likely, right? So do you really think you're worse off? And then the Padres lose Snell. Are they worse off than the Padres? You know, the Giants, are you really sold on that pitching staff that Logan Webb is this dynamo? Same thing with Arizona. Even if they just pick up those two guys with Senga, the top three and Quintana is four, suddenly your four-man rotation is not as good as Atlanta's. Surprise! We knew that.
Yeah.
So now it's just – it still has a chance to be one of the top four or five rotations in the National League.
Can you be a wild card?
Well, yes, you have Alonso. You know, the kid behind the plate – I don't know if you guys saw the way the game ended last night, right? Just to go off the thing, right? Okay, the balk. Clear balk. Alvarez sees it. The kid's 20 years old. Tries to fake it like something's not working in his headset. And they had a little – I mean, the presence of mind of this kid – who everybody said, and you said it a few times early in the year, can't believe how much better he is behind the plate than we thought. And he just showing that maturity, right? And you sit there with Beatty, but Nimmo's still solid, and you got to – Mauricio's going to play now, and you're going to see what you have. And there's a lot of fun things to like about this team going forward. So I think that the core is there. I was a little surprised they didn't try to get more pitching in the deals. I mean, I understand the Acuna move. We all see it just because if he's anything like his brother, you had to do it. But for Verlander, I'm stunned you didn't take a pitcher and you went outfielders twice. That was the bad. That was the trade I wouldn't have done.
To me, part of it is now you've brought all these prospects, and let's break it down to two things: major league level. You said Alvarez. Alonso, looking at next year, McNeil a second, Lindor short for the next decade. You're hoping Beatty can finish off the year strong. Marte, I still think he's going to bounce back next year. He's too good a player. Nimmo's in center. either Vientos or Mauricio, or you come up with a left fielder somehow, some way, whatever it is, okay? You feel like your everyday lineup is going to be okay. You know, Coleman can go out, and if he needs one more bat, either to play DH or to play left field, he'll find it. I'm not concerned about one bat. As long as it's not Vogelback, you know, getting all the left-handed DH.
But I could see a CJ Krohn being the type of guy that he goes and makes a little bit of a move on.
Yeah.
Somebody like that you don't get hit 25 homers and hit in the league. Sorry, yep. Didn't mean to cut you off.
It's improvement over Canna.
Yep.
So your everyday lineup next year is still going to look very much like you do this year. Like Darren, you mentioned, I think earlier, you're hoping that everybody bounces back and hits even to the back of the baseball card.
Yep.
The pitching we talked about, go out, get a couple of starters. I think the rest of the year, I think you still got it. You know, at this point, you give Peterson McGill one more chance. What the hell? You've got nothing to lose at this point. You know Carrasco's gone. You know, you got two starters you need to go out and get, you know, for sure. Diaz will be back next year. You kept Raleigh. You kept Ottavino. You kept Smith. So you need a couple of extra bullpen arms. You know, and we know bullpen guys, you know, every year, you know, they're up and down. You never know what you got. To me, I think the biggest thing is when you look at the prospects, and I'm going with the MLB rankings. The Met minor leagues with some of the guys they promoted, with Beatty and Alvarez and Vientos up, all these trades they made, and including Escobar, they have now, just with these prospects, they take up 9 of the top 25 positions on Major League Baseball's rankings of their prospects.
Yeah.
You know, Acuna took a 2, Drew Gilbert 4, Ryan Clifford 6, Marco Vargas was the infielder they got for Robertson 9, and so on and so on. I mean, this just shows how bad the Met minor leagues were. So they brought in talent to at least be top prospects. Now, the other thing they did was they've got a lot of outfielders. They seem to have a hell of a lot of shortstops. And it's very hard when you've got a shortstop here for the next 10 years. But that doesn't mean you can't turn around. And some of these prospects start to show something in the minor leagues. Doesn't mean you can't turn around for pitching prospects.
That's it.
No, you're 100% right.
That's it.
So to me, this trade deadline is more, and I know part of it was, you know, talking to what Scherzer came out with, was probably looking ahead more towards 2025. Mm-hmm. But I think make the right free agent signings next year. At least give the Met fan a season next year to compete for the wild card. Give us a reason to watch his team. Give us a reason to go out to Citi Field to go out and watch his team. Knowing that, hey, we're not quite there yet, but give us 2025 and maybe some of these guys start to show up. Because, you know, if Acuna moves to second base, now McNeil becomes an outfielder possibly. He becomes a trade bait. You know, if McNeil can get back to his back of his baseball card and start hitting over 300 again next year. Marte, after next year, he'll have 1 year left. He's eligible to be moved. You know, I mean, it just sets you up for a lot of different ways you can go with if you get the right brain trust in the front office that you can trust to make these proper moves going ahead.
Billy Epler.
You know,
I had to throw his name in there, kid. I had to throw his name out there.
I didn't like some of the moves he made before this trade deadline. I don't think he did a terrible job. I thought he did okay, knowing that he has Steve Cohen's money to pay down Scherzer and Verlander and get some of these prospects back. To get three of the top six prospects currently in the Mets organization were just the two trades for Scherzer and Verlander, says he got some value.
I agree.
I agree with you, and when you take the money aspect out of this equation, you know, other than the fact that you won't have Verlander in your rotation next year, I don't think you're that upset about everything that happened, Kev.
Like we said, all three of us agree, Verlander was the one that really sticks in your craw.
You did get two prospects for him, yep. And you'll see what happens. I mean, again, taking the money out of the equation really changes a lot of the dynamic of this.
Yep.
Darren, do you want to touch on the Yankees?
Well, let me go through all the major moves the Yankees made.
Okay.
And there we are.
They brought in Kenyon Middleton from from the White Sox,
who in no way improves this team.
And they brought in Spencer Howard from Texas,
who was going to probably be DFA'd anyway. I mean, basically, the Yankees decided to do absolutely nothing. Tonight, when Juan Franco went yard in the first inning, the chance of fire Cashman, first time I heard it at the stadium, were blaring at the stadium. Now, this team had so many holes. They still don't have a left fielder. Nobody can hit. They have no closer, okay? They didn't want to do that. Starting rotation, Ramon just went on the Alcoholic Anonymous list or whatever he did today. Whatever list we call that list.
They don't have a catcher.
There's no catcher. They did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. While everybody else in the division at least tried to do something, the Yankees did absolutely nothing. It was as bad a performance as you can see. I mean, listen, you guys know I you follow a bunch of teams. The Padres below 500 made all these moves like they were in it, like a bunch, you know, but at least you feel like they're trying. The Yankees didn't even make an effort to try to improve this team in any way. You can't tell me you can't. Teoscar Hernandez is sitting there. Seattle can't wait to get this guy who's struggling like crazy out of their building. You can't tell me he's not going to cost you a lot that you can't pick up Teoscar Hernandez, throw him left field, and let him play against Toronto, and maybe he'll be angry six times down the stretch and actually hit in a series. I mean, they did nothing. Gee, it was mesmerizing how embarrassing the Yankee performance during this trade deadline was.
So here it comes, and that is, honestly, you can point to a couple of guys like Teoscar Hernandez. But honestly, I don't know what we expected him to do. Because
I needed to get a left fielder.
Tommy Pham.
The team is
Tommy Pham. I would have taken him.
What, you don't have a 17-year-old kid for the Mets to take a flyer on to get Tommy Pham?
The team is in such a rut that replacing one guy on this team is not going to do anything. Now, I do think he is, and I'm talking about Cashman, he's betting on we're going to play better the second half from August 1st. Judge is healthy somewhat. I'm going to count on getting Cortez back. I'm going to count on getting Loaiza back. And I'm going to count on Rodon pitching well now down the stretch here. They're only three games out, and that I think in his mind, that's what he's doing. But, you know, you started this conversation, Darren. You know, it's not one trade. You know, they need a catcher. They need a left fielder. They need some production out of third base. They need some production out of first base. They need a closer. If you're getting some of these guys back, but now Herman went down, you still need a starter somewhere. So you can't – you got a second baseman and two shortstops – not playing well at all. So, you know, Glaber, okay, is playing decent, but between Peraza and Volpe and nobody's even playing well. You know, I know you don't want to see McKinney out there. I don't want to see McKinney out there. Bader's a free agent at the end of the year. Do you want them to sign Bader? Here we go. I mean, you know, are we going to talk?
No, he's injured too much.
You know, are we going to go from Johnny Damon to Aaron Hicks to Harrison Bader? I mean, I don't even want him here.
Listen, you skipped Jacoby Ellsbury.
So, on purpose. So if you...
No, he belonged in that crew. Sorry. he belonged right there with those guys.
If you then add the fact that then you need a center fielder also, making a trade for Jaime Candelaria is not doing the deal here.
Listen, the Miami Marlins made four or five small deals just to improve themselves in little spots. The Yankees didn't have to they didn't have to stand tall. They just had to stand up. You're 3.5 games out of the wild card. It's not like you're gone. Like you said, the rotation is all coming back. Hermano Severino was going to get sent to the pen anyway. Her mom made that easier. I was hoping it was going to be Severino after I sat down in the rubber game on a Sunday night to watch the Yankees play the Orioles, where Severino couldn't get an out until he gave up six runs. I mean, so I was praying for her mom to get the spot, and then he went on some drinking binge or whatever the hell. So now he's gone. So now so now the rotation's kind of set. You know, Cortez comes back, I think, Friday. So you had it already. You needed one more guy out of the pen, and it wasn't the guy they got. It just wasn't. He's a middle-of-the-road reliever. Brad Hand was available. I'd take Brad Hand over Middleton. I'd take a veteran back there that's not afraid to get big outs in a big spot. You can't tell me I can't find a left fielder. I know I use Hernandez because he was linked a little bit, but like Kev said, Tommy Pham can hit. He's a streaky guy, but he can hit. There are a bunch of guys that you could find a way to get onto this roster that can play better left field than we're getting now, that can play defense and maybe get a little bit of pop. I didn't need to make a splash. I just needed to make an effort. I don't think they made an effort.
I agree with you, just so you know. I agree with you. They did not make an effort, but I just think making a little effort doesn't really get us anywhere at this point. It just doesn't. If the guys we have here are not going to produce for the rest of the year, it's not going to matter. So if we're getting this production – go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
So let me ask you then. Cashman did nothing. And I know you – was he better doing nothing? Or was he better saying, this is not a championship team. Maybe if we keep this team together, maybe they get hot. Maybe they get the wild card. Who never knows? Or would they have been better off to say, Clay Holmes is 30-plus. Wandy Peralta is over 30. Harrison Bader is going to be a free agent. Teams are looking for relievers. Would they have been better off trying to sell a couple of these guys to bring in some younger talent?
I would have
preferred. What would you have preferred?
I would have preferred that. I would have preferred them getting rid of these guys. I would have.
That would have been my second option. First would have been Ed, because I'm close enough. Second would have been subtract. Third would have been nothing.
So you wanted them to do something. At least do something. One or the other.
I wanted to see them either add or subtract. I didn't want to see them do nothing. Because nothing makes you just feel like they don't care.
My comment yesterday and this morning was, at least the Mets did something and have a direction. And I still believe that. So, yes, I agree with you, Kev.
2009 is a long time ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, this is the New York freaking Yankees. This is not just a team that's had up and down. It's not even the Atlanta Braves who have been consistent, because they don't win. Nobody cares. This is the Yankees. It's been 14 years. You're three games out of the playoffs. This kid is all about the making sure he doesn't go over the luxury tax. Meanwhile, Baltimore's making moves, and they should have, and I was glad that they see them do it.
Yep.
Toronto made moves.
Are we off the Yankees? I think
it's all part of the Yankee point. Yankees are the only team in the division that didn't. Even the Red Sox made a move. The Yankees are the only team in the division that didn't. I know they're in last place, but they're not really in last place by 40.
Yeah.
They're in last place by a game behind the Red Sox, and they're close on everything else. Yeah, we can switch now, G. I just thought that Cashman's performance was inept.
I agree. And if we rewind the tape 3 months ago, I called for his head and so did you. I said it was time for a change. I still think that's the case. I just have a feeling it's not going to happen again. I just hope they realize that they really need to make some changes to this team, because they're in purgatory with this team right now.
Yeah, and the final point before you start moving it around the league. So they got Howard from Texas for cash. Texas has been spending like drunken sailors just trying to get into the race. They obviously had no need for Howard. We had to cash up for a guy that's going to be yet another middle reliever. I mean, what, we sent down Marinaccio. I mean, what are we doing? It's just a joke. Just a bad job. Bad job all around. Ineptness. Ineptitude. Gino.
All right, so last week when we talked about a lot of these guys moving, I wound up naming 21 players, and 10 of those got moved. So on the whole, we didn't do too bad. 10 of those 21 names got moved. But I'm going to go, and that's why I kind of stopped you. I'm going to go back to something you said last week, Darren. You said you thought Baltimore and Cincinnati need to do something to generate the fan bases because they had decent teams and they're playing really well. The Reds basically did nothing. They couple of little little moves, and Baltimore seemed to really do nothing. And at the last minute, pulled a trade off for Flaherty from St. Louis. And honestly, I don't think that they were planning on making that move. And they kind of said, hey, wait a minute, we got to do something. So in that respect, I think you're right, Darren. If they had made a move for Verlander, I think they really could have changed things. The look of this AL race, they didn't. They basically standed pat because Flaherty, what's Flaherty going to be? The third starter in here, the fourth starter? I don't think he makes an impact.
You get nervous about a guy that didn't pitch well in St. Louis coming to Camden and pitching well. But the thing about Flaherty that it really comes down to is if he could throw strikes. If he doesn't walk people, he's pretty decent. It's about the walks for Flaherty. He could be a major help for this team down the stretch. I expected them to do more. Sorry, Kev.
I think when you look at Gibson, Kramer, Wells, Bradish, it's not like Baltimore has household names in the rotation. No. Getting Flaherty at least sends a message to the team that, hey, we got you another starter. We've got you a guy who's been a winner in the major leagues. Good, bad, or indifferent, at least we did something. We believe in this team enough to go out and make a move to add. And that's more than, like you said, you can say for Cincinnati.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was stunned that Cincinnati didn't pull the trigger on a pitcher. I really was.
That's another interesting one, the Central, with who did make ads.
All right, so
both Centrals are very interesting. Anyway. Yep.
Tell me what team you think did a great job.
Cubbies. The Cubbies, they kept Bellinger, they kept Stroman, a couple of guys that were talked about, and they went out, they added Candelaria from the Nationals. So they made one other big trade.
I know they acquired Kuos from Kansas City, the reliever.
The bullpen guy. But I think for them, it was more keeping guys rather than trading guys that all of a sudden they became, at least out of the fringe, buyers that, they're close enough now. They went on enough of a run to be close enough in that Central Division to possibly challenge for the division title. I mean, they're only about four games back of Cincinnati, who did nothing. I don't think Milwaukee necessarily did anything.
The Santana move was a move. The Santana move was key for them. They got a big bat. They did. I can't say they did nothing. I would have thought there would have been another follow-up move beyond it. They really did not. I thought the Rangers were the team that really surprised me with how much they did. Starting with the Grom, I'm not the Grom.
Scherzer,
my bad. They get at Montgomery and Stratton right behind it and just keep the pitching kind of going. I was pretty impressed with that. Oh, and also Milwaukee did pick up the Chafin too, so they did pick up a reliever, which doesn't hurt them.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yep, there it is.
That was the guy that I couldn't remember for a second. Yep. I thought the Rangers, for the most part, made a couple of nice moves there, and I thought the Angels made a couple of nice moves. Those are two teams that stood out to me.
I like Miami. I like them getting Josh Bell to play first and Berger to play third. I thought that they added a little power to that lineup. I know Berger's almost comparable to a Dave Kingman, but You're gonna take him and Urias, and hopefully they balance themselves out. So not Urias, Arias. I thought I liked the two moves they made. I also kind of listen for what it's worth. If you are a team like St. Louis, you're going to get rid of some of these guys. That's the way to do it. The same thing with the White Sox. Same thing with the Mets. If you're going to do it, just do it. I hate half-assing everything. Yep. The White Sox deal Giolito, Lynn, Kelly. Then they ship Berger out. I mean, if you're going to do it, do it. So The other move Texas made then was they brought in Austin Hedges from the Padres with the Heim injury, which is a big thing right now. Because I think they're kind of worried about the Heim injury. And I know they don't want Garver being their everyday catcher right now. So
I think that's one. I think Toronto getting Dion to replace Bichette. With him being questionable, too. That was another – you know, like somebody was saying, imagine if Bichette gets hurt Tuesday night instead of Monday night.
Yeah. No, they have nothing there.
Yeah.
Well, Covan Biggio is moving over to short now.
Well, I was surprised that, you know – you mentioned Chafin before. I'm surprised Arizona gave up Chafin.
Well, you know what? It was a lefty for a righty. It wasn't really a slaughter kind of deal. Was having a pretty decent year, I thought.
They did acquire Seawald from Seattle. So I mean, you know, you're basically slotting one guy in for another, theoretically, you know.
So with Seawald added to, you know, Chafin and a couple of the other guys they had out there, boy, that would have been a real shutdown pen.
Yeah, and Darren, the one other than Seawald, the other closer that went was Barlow.
Yeah, to the Padres.
Right.
Well, the Padres went out and they went out and got Cooper, in a trade for Weathers. It was almost like both teams trying to make a move to help themselves out. So you understood that one. Then they went out and got Rich Hill and G-Man Choi for prospects. The biggest one being Jackson Wolf, who's like a 6'7" pitcher. He pitched one start a few weeks back. You know, 6'7", but he doesn't throw harder than 92. And Barlow for a minor leaguer.
I like that. I see. So after Miami picks up Josh Bell, then they deal Cooper for a reliever, and they get Weather. You know what I mean? Like they're moving the pieces around here at least. So,
okay. Question for you guys: what'd you think about what Seattle and Cleveland did? Two teams that were in the race and basically sold.
Well, I mean, Cleveland
gave up Savali for nothing.
And Josh Bell.
And Josh Bell for nothing. They got Segura back and they released him immediately.
Yeah, I mean.
So Cleveland sold, right?
Yeah.
Seattle also sold.
Seattle only had one path to the playoffs. That was through the wild card.
They're only three games out.
But are they? But with that, you know, you're not thinking you're going to catch Tampa or Houston. So the only team they could possibly catch was Toronto. Was there enough out there for them to pass Toronto?
Well, I don't know. None of us really know, but you have a bunch of guys that aren't playing to the back of their card there either.
Yep.
Like Hernandez, like Suarez. Guys like that, but you know, would you prefer it's the same question about the Yankees. Would you have rather done nothing, stayed pat, or went for it? If you're Seattle and you won a playoff series last year, is it time to say we're three out, we're giving up? I don't know. I'm just asking. It's an interesting question because we don't live in Seattle and we don't follow it as closely. But the fact of the matter is that Seattle, as close as the Yankees are, the Angels, same spot. Angels went for it. All right. Angels said we have Ohtani for two more months and we're gonna go for it. Maybe and hopefully not, Trout comes back for the last month. And hopefully these other moves that we make around them are gonna do something. You know, but the Mariners say no when, you know, again, they still have some games left with the A's and some weak teams in that division.
Between the two teams, I have more of a problem with Cleveland given up, because I think Minnesota
did nothing.
Cleveland was, you know, game and a half back, I think, at the deadline. You know, they're right there for the Central.
I agree.
To give up Savali, who's been their best starter, I think, this year.
And by the way, you know, if you're thinking about that American League Central, the White Sox are tearing apart their team. Kansas City is not good. Detroit is 12 games under. So really the only team you're battling is Minnesota
most out of anybody to help their team by doing nothing, by trading relievers last week. That was the biggest move that was made. Detroit tried to sell Eduardo Rodriguez. He refused to go to the Dodgers. So Detroit tried to make a bigger splash in a sale and could not do it. He turned down the trade. I guess he doesn't want to win.
They did send Lorenz in to the Phillies. That was the other thing.
I get it. And they got a relatively high prospect Yeah. Lorenzen, I thought. But the, from what I'm reading, again, I haven't seen the kid play. I'd be lying to say Lee play. I haven't seen Lee play. I can't tell you how good he is. But he's number five in the organization.
So here's the only thing with Cleveland, right? You know, if the Guardians don't think that Savali is going to keep this up for the rest of the season, they seem to have a decent supply of pitching. Giving him up is not a big deal. Is Josh Bell, does Josh Bell become a big deal? I don't know. I don't know enough about the Guardians minor league system to know if they have a first baseman that came up and play or not. Tonight they played Fry at first base.
Who's so a catcher? He's a catcher, you know, first baseman. Naylor can play first base. Right. They have guys that they can plug in there.
Right. So I don't know if there's somebody else they're going to replace Bell with that's that big of a deal. You know, I agree with Kev, though. I have a bigger problem with Cleveland. Seattle, you know what? They're dealing with the Astros. They're dealing with the Angels. That, you know, it's a little – it becomes a little bit deeper than just, you know, making a push here when you got to get past both of those teams to win a division. And if you're in the wild card, now you got seven teams that you're trying to, you know, beat out. So,
oh, I get it. But I was just surprised when you're that close and you're a small market team like Seattle, who had a huge playoff drought until last year. You know, why would you? I don't know. I would have tried it. I always believe in trying when I'm close. I'm not the guy that believes in selling when we're close. The Yankees were disappointing, you know, but I think Cleveland was probably more disappointing than the Yankees.
If it's possible. So over the course of, let's call it the last week leading up to the deadline, I'll start it with like the Giolito trade, right? Mm-hmm. There were approximately 42 trades that happened. Listen, a lot of one-off players, you know, the Seawall, there's one player. In the trade, it feels like all of these trades are for a prospect. There are not those trades anymore where I'm giving you an outfielder and you're trading me a pitcher. I feel like it just doesn't happen. I mean, the one trade and it, Josh Bell goes to Miami and they turn around and send Segura to Cleveland and then they cut Segura. But other than that, I don't even feel like both sides got major league players back in most of these deals. There's a couple here and there. But for the most part, it was, I'm trading you Lance Lynn and I'm trading you Kelly and you're going to send me prospects. And it's, I don't want to say it's weird, but with 41 trades, and that's a lot of trades, I felt like this was a big deal yesterday with all these trades flying all over the place. And yet I look around right now, baseball, and other than a couple of trades here and there, the Rangers, you know, getting the guy, and I don't know. It just, I feel like something's missing with the deadline. Did you guys get that feeling? What did you think of the trade deadline on the whole?
I thought there was a lot of activity. I really did, actually. But but you're right. There was not. It wasn't like there was any trade where two teams in the hunt tried to help each other, help themselves out, and trade prospects for each other.
Yep.
But one thing about Seattle stood out to me also. Just the last point, they traded Pollock and Matthias to San Francisco for the ever so famous player to be named later. So if you're a Mariner fan, you don't even know who's coming. You don't even have Royce Ring's name in your ear, Kev. Royce Ring. Because he was the guy that was going to save the Mets with the Roberto Alomar trade. I'm just saying, you know, you don't even have that. Oh, he throws 100 miles. I mean, they have nothing. They have a player to be named later. They just gave it up. Like you said, Gino, it was a very interesting trade deadline to me because teams that don't normally get heavily involved, like Miami, like even the Cubs to an extent, like Baltimore got involved late. You know, there were teams that don't normally get involved that were heavily involved, and teams that are usually heavily involved, like the Yankees and the Red Sox. Red Sox made one move for Urias. The Yankees made zero moves, really, or if you want to call Middleton a move, great. So that's where it kind of stood out to me. The Dodgers made a couple of minor moves. The Phillies made the one move. I mean, you know, it wasn't a lot from the teams you expected. Kev?
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's it was definitely a seller's market. You know, when you look at, especially the Mets, the White Sox, were another one that took advantage. They, I mean, they unloaded their entire bullpen. They unloaded Giolito. You know, but we
Burger.
Yeah, but like you said, we do miss the blockbuster, you know, position player for pitcher. You
well,
know,
last year was team. Bader from Montgomery. Last year, Bader from Montgomery.
Yeah.
Right? Not blockbuster,
but just
solid.
I've got surplus here. You've got surplus there. Let's make a move.
There was none of that in this trade, in this trade year. Closest thing was Trace Thompson going back in a trade. That was the closest thing with the Dodgers and the White Sox, where they got Trace Thompson who played. That's about it.
Yep. All right. I think we have beaten baseball to a pulp.
No, we haven't.
Darren, where do you want to go next, Darren?
Well, just two last things. The Yankees are a disgrace. They only win the Cold Stone. Severino was disgusting on Sunday night. Again, working all weekend, sweating my butt off to get ready. Just want to watch the rubber game. Doesn't even give me a chance to watch it. My God, what has happened to this guy? Obviously it's disgusting. I just wanted to get that out because it really ruined my Sunday night. I'll just leave it there. I was so upset. I was like, I can't even watch this game. I was like, what the hell's going on here? Let's go to NFL. Last week we talked a little bit about the attack on Sean Payton had on Hackett. Rodgers came out very strong this week, attacking Payton a little bit. Also, Rodgers came back out and said that he plans on being here a few years. That means more than two, Kev. And he seems to like what's going on. He also ripped Green Bay a little bit. You can't not – and he broke up a fight in practice today. You can't not like what this guy's been doing so far. Listen, we'll see. The proof's in the pudding. Like I said last week, week three, shoulder, whatever. But we'll see what happens. Hopefully we get through that. But a lot of good things to like about this Jet, Kev.
If anybody saw Get Up with Greeny, you know, the big Jet fan, and his reaction to Rodgers' comments about Hackett, that's the way I felt. It was like, damn, we have a quarterback. We have somebody who's going to fucking take this team and lead them. We have a face. We have a voice. We have a leader. We have somebody who's going to sit there and defend the Jets. When he sits there and tells Peyton, you keep my coach's name out of your mouth. When's the last time we had a Jet like that?
Well, let's be honest. He stole that line from Will Smith in the award show. The exact line.
Okay. But
nonetheless, I like the fiery attitude. I agree with you. It's fun to see it. He took less money because he wanted to show his commitment. He also took less money because he wanted to try to get Dalvin Cook here and other talent, and said, if there's something at the trade deadline that this team needs, I don't want my salary to be the reason why we can't make that move.
Yep.
What?
Aaron Rodgers is saying and doing everything you want as a Jet fan that you want, that you are praying for. You know, the backing up the team, doing the things for the team, taking salary cuts, saying that he plans to be here for multiple years. I mean, you're thrilled.
You really are. Because the thing is now that the Jets have expectations, and we haven't had this, like, honestly, in our lifetimes, well, except for the year of 1998, this is probably the only time since that year where Jets truly have expectations and are not an offensive underdog.
Yep. I mean, and Rodgers come off as one of his worst years. You look at the numbers. That would have been one of the best years of any Jet quarterback in history.
Third best.
Joe Willie and which one? Vinny or Fitzpatrick?
I think it was Vinny that had the second. I'm not 100%. I thought it was the third most. But I'd have to look at it. But you know what? But his accuracy is beyond. No Jet quarterback's ever been this accurate. No. None of them. So it'd be very, very, really exciting. Becton admitted that part of it was his problem. He's more than willing to start on the right side if he earns the spot. Everybody's nervous about the offensive line. Relax. Brown will be off pup in a week or so. Becton will fight with Mitchell at right tackle. There is some depth on the offensive line. I'm really not that concerned about it. Skill positions you like. You know, if you get Dalvin Cook, great. If he's just using us for leverage against Miami, then it is what it is. We made the move. We made the offer. We'll see what happens.
He's a luxury.
And the defensive line looks outstanding. The first round kid McDonald is living in the backfield in every report I read. The safety, the second year kid, the undrafted kid out of Purdue is playing lights out. I'm blanking on his name, right? Adams. I was blanking on his name for a second. And obviously we love the corners on this team. Well, can't wait. First game tomorrow night.
When you've got 20 defensive linemen to rotate through, you know, it's.
Listen, you know what?
Somebody's got to do well.
I'll take an embarrassment of riches whenever I can.
Oh, so will I. Don't get me wrong.
Cooper Kupp got banged up today, so we'll see what happens with that. Hopefully nothing too serious because he was lost for most of the year last year. And Tim Patrick got hurt, knocked out for the season last year, got knocked out for the season again this year. Yeah. He was a guy that was kind of coming on the last couple of years that he played. I thought he was a breakout candidate last year, not realizing how bad Russell Wilson had gotten. But, you know, with Sean Payton, I think he would have been a real fine and a fantasy sleeper. So those are my NFL points. I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to add.
Nope, I had nothing else.
You're up, Kev.
The only other thing I had in my notes was the women's soccer team.
Bring it up.
Skate advancing to the knockout round by the skin of their teeth. Now, playing at 3:00 in the morning, I know you guys didn't get up. I didn't get up, that's for sure. But to watch the highlights, their game against Portugal, they needed a tie to advance to the knockout round. Portugal, in stoppage time, hits the post. That's how close the women were to get knocked out in the group stage. This team can't score. They've got no originality on offense. And what's going to be interesting going ahead, the World Cup schedule is done up. They did this months ago, setting up all the times and all the brackets and everything else on the assumption that the U.S. women are going to win the group and made sure all of their group, that group winner was going to play in advantageous time slots for an American audience. Now you're going to be having the women playing at 3:00 in the morning, 2:00 in the morning.
And you get to watch the Dutch.
They're not going to – their ratings are going to be awful this year.
Well, I mean, listen.
Nobody's going to be watching this women's team this year. That's for sure.
The funniest thing is, and I've seen a couple of morons post, oh, the women's is better than the men's. I don't know what you're watching. It just really isn't. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude to the women. It's a different sport. It's not to insult the women. It's just that the quality of play is different. But, you know, if it was a men's soccer playing in Australia and playing in New Zealand, they were playing at 3 in the morning, I got to be honest, there would be some matches where I'd be making the effort to get up or at least get up for the second half and setting the alarm for 4 and missing the first hour. And because I wake up at 5 anyway. It doesn't really matter. I wake up an hour earlier and probably watch it like I do the British Open. It would not throw me off that much. But for the women, there's no reason to do so.
I remember going back 20, 30 years ago, whenever it was, one of the first times the men actually made the World Cup, and they were playing at 4:00 in the morning. I would set my alarm, and I would get up to watch them. What was that, late 90s, 2000 roughly, that time frame with Alexi Lalas and all those guys?
I think it was the mid-90s. Might have been 94, when 98, something like that.
Yeah.
But even with that, we were much younger too. But also, but you're right. I mean, the U.S. team has been less than stellar. They have not shown they struggled to score 3 goals against Thailand. You know, I mean, which is a team that they should score 6 or 7 against, like the Dutch did. So, yeah, I you know, listen, rooting for the Americans, want the girls to win, but. You know, but it's not that important to me. There's no players on the team that I truly like, embrace and enjoy just because of the political nature of the team. For a player that doesn't even play.
Now, the women have always been dominant, and this goes back. You know, I brought this up in previous weeks, just in women's sports in general. When you look at women's soccer, when you look at women's basketball, they have been so dominant on the world stage. A lot of it goes back to Title IX and giving women a chance to play through college and everything else. Is the rest of the world catching up? Maybe not the rest of the world, but a lot of these other countries, are they starting to catch up to the U.S. and developing their women's teams?
Well, let's be honest. It's very similar to what happened with the NBA. European countries were able to come out there and compete. South American countries like Brazil and Argentina worked on their game. Asian countries, you know, China in particular, really worked on their game. And I think that same thing happened. You start off with a huge lead, but it's not like the American women are born with such a superior athletic ability to the women of Sweden or France or anything like that. They just had more programs for it.
Yep, they've got more opportunity to advance as they've gotten as they progress in age. And, you know, these other countries, like you said, the program's starting to improve that you see because of the U.S., you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. You know, you're seeing the rest of the world starting to rise up with, you know, to catch up to the Americans.
I agree. I think that, you know, hey, listen, I don't love all the women on this team. I don't root for them. I don't feel like a lot of them really want to represent the country as much as I'd like to see. But again, I'm not in their hearts. I'm not in their minds. We get a blurb, so I can't say that I'm 100% accurate on everything that I feel. But at the same time, they've made it where it becomes a non-appointment sport, which, you know, 20 years ago for the women, it was an appointment sport.
When you had Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, and all those girls that were
just... Abby Wambach, yep. You know, Curry, Solo, you had a Scurry, yep. I should say.
Solo in it. Solo and Scurry, you know, yep. Depending on which year you're looking at. Yep. Yep.
Exactly. It was Scurry first, then Solo to go. I mean, I'm just saying, but these were very talented. Julie Fowler, these were very talented women that were head and shoulders above any team that they played. So yep. It's a different time now.
Okay. Darren, tell us about some boxing.
Well, the fight I've been touting wasn't much of a fight. It didn't work out. The guy I thought was going to win won. I thought Crawford would beat Spence, but Spence won the first round. Crawford, after that, just kind of pretty much annihilated him. Spence said, better man won. I mean, there's a little talk about Spence having to make the weight, and he has a hard time. He wants to fight at 154. Crawford's just a great fighter. I don't know what else to say. He said he would beat Mayweather as prime. I like the boldness. I don't know if that's true, but I would love to see that fight. Now we have another one coming up on September 30th. You get Canelo Alvarez and Jermell, not Jamal, his twin brother Jermell Charlo. Jermell is 35-1-1. Jermall is 32-0. So and they fight Canelo. If I asked you how old Canelo Alvarez is, you guys know? You guys have an idea?
Sounds like he's about 54 years old.
33.
He's been fighting.
He's only 33 years old. He's been around this long. Yeah. He started so young. Both of these guys are 33 years old. Again, this is one of those that I would expect Canelo to win this fight. Both Charlos are very good fighters. Just to note about Jermell, and I'll get into it as we get closer to the fight. He has a loss and a draw. For his loss, he lost to Tony Harrison, fought him in the next fight, knocked him out. For his draw, he had a draw with Castaño, fought him in the next round, next fight, knocked him out. So he's always found a way to come back. But the thing about Canelo is Canelo has fought everybody. Hard to imagine him not winning this one against Charlo, but we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, disappointed in the outcome of Crawford and Spence. Just thought it'd be a little bit more exciting fight.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
Kev?
One quick thing, Dolph. So this past weekend was the Senior Open Championship. It would have been interesting to see the regular guys play in these conditions in Wales. I don't know if you had a chance to see it.
I did not see it.
Sunday, the rain, the wind. Y.E. Yang and some other guy named Labritz. Only two guys who shot par on Saturday, on Sunday. Wow. I mean, the tournament ended up Alex Cheka and Padraig Harrington tied for the lead at 5 over. Cheka won in the playoff, but to get 5 over as a champion, wow. Those were conditions we would have, I think, had more fun watching than watching Brian Harman just coast to the victory the weekend before.
No, it's very, very different. The weather can play such a major factor out there at the Open. Anywhere in Great Britain.
These guys are bundled up. They're trying to get umbrellas to fend off the wind and the rain. And it was just, it was like that. That's open championship golf. Not what we saw.
Very true. Very true. And but just one last point. One last point on the Pac-12. The conference is dwindling away and falling apart. Colorado is now left along with UCLA, USC. The new commissioner came out with a plan that none of the other schools have ratified. Most of it was Apple streaming. Looks like it's making a lot less money. Hearing things about the Big Ten now going after Oregon and Washington, maybe even going after Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford. And if that happens, the Pac-10 or Pac-12 or whatever they want to call it is going to be the Mountain West. It's going to be the Mountain West with Oregon State and Washington State. That's what it's going to end up being. It's a proud conference. It's going to be gone quick. Florida State also threw something off the bounty today saying that if they don't start making more money, they want out of the ACC. You know, Clemson will be right there with them, amongst other schools that produce a lot for football. So there's a lot of turmoil in the wonderful world of college athletics.
Can you imagine the SEC adding Clemson and Florida State?
It would be unreal, unreal. The Big 12 is looking at the Arizonas and Utah, and there's a lot going on. We could get down where there's no ACC and no Pac-12 in a very short amount of time. Any other points from you boys? Because we still managed to go an hour, even though I said there was no way we would today.
No, I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino talking about the wonderful world of sports with you. Please download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, you know, anywhere you can possibly get one. We post things on Facebook. You like them, tell us. You don't like them, tell me. We'll respond back to you, I promise. We just want to get your input and your take on what's going on in current events and sports stuff, and we'll keep posting every weekend or whenever something important comes out. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.